And then they would run them to their advantage. And this characterizes the whole commercial and colonial arrangements that appear in the Aegean world under the Venetians, and then with the Genoese as they develop the island of Cyprus and the associated areas around Outremer and the Black Sea. Both cities immediately understand that this is what's necessary to be done. The result is that in the generation following the Fourth Crusade, Venice has control of the Aegean and a good deal of the eastern Mediterranean waters. They control the Adriatic, and they also have acquired an extremely important position both in Acre, we'll get to that in a moment with the War of St. Sabaeus, and in Alexandria. As I mentioned in the earlier lecture, that the Ayyubid sultans of Egypt were quite interested in keeping up these trade connections with the Venetians and gave the Venetians factories and a residence in Alexandria, with which the Venetians developed to the same degree as they did in the Crusader ports and now in the Aegean world. So Venice, by 1300, has all of the key points along the vital trade routes under her control, with garrisons, administration. And this explains why, in some ways, the Venetians become such adept diplomats. And as I mentioned perhaps in one of the very first lectures in this series, many of our notions of diplomacy, of consular immunity, the fact that the diplomats are set up in residence that represent the home country, all of these types of protocols were pioneered by Venetians in the 13th, 14th, and 15th century, and because they had this wide-flung commercial empire, the Venetians were always in negotiations with the land powers that controlled the origin of resources or the start of those trade routes. The Venetians always wanted to make sure they had the most favorable concessions, they had the best information on what was going on in the courts, and the result is from the 13th century on, there was no one in the Mediterranean world better informed about political conditions at court across Europe as well as the Islamic world than the Venetians. And when, by the time we get to the far more heavily documented 15th and 16th century, the letters of the Venetian ambassadors are really some of the best sources for much of the political history of, say, modern Europe, the French court, the English court. And this all comes out of the development of this peculiar commercial empire in the 13th century in the aftermath of the Fourth Crusade. Well, what was said for Venice also can apply in varying degrees to Genoa as well. As I mentioned, Genoa, too, had the advantages of a certain amount of geographic isolation, and Genoa got in on the crusading operations very quickly. The Genoese were supporting the First Crusade. In 1103, a Genoese fleet of 70 galleys, which is an enormous military fleet for the early 12th century, showed up to support the forces of Baldwin I, Count Raymond of Toulouse, to besiege Tripoli. The county of Tripoli, when it finally capitulated to the Christians and was established by 1109, was closely linked to the Genoese republic. There were very close ties between Genoa and Tripoli ever after. The Genoese also began to displace very quickly Pisans, Amalfians, and others who were in on the early stages of the Crusades. Genoese citizens received fiefs in Outremer. Hugh Ambriciaco, who became the Lord of Jabal, I mentioned that family before, became one of the most important vassals in the county of Tripoli and had also fiefs in the kingdom of Jerusalem. And so Genoa had connections with many of the most important baronial families in Outremer. And the Third Crusade was really important for the Genoese. The Third Crusade played something of the role that the Fourth Crusade did for the Venetians for two reasons. Once the ports were recovered, many of the former Crusader ports were retaken by Richard Lionhearted. This meant the Genoese could move in again. The Genoese and their associated lines, they were very closely linked often with the Hospitallers. And they took over the carrying trade. They reestablished their factories in these cities. Second, the Genoese were invited by the Lusignan kings of Cyprus to come in and develop Cyprus. It's Genoese money and banking and Genoese investors who developed the plantation trade in Cyprus, especially in citrus fruits, a certain amount of sugar, finished goods. And the great prosperity of the Crusader Kingdom of Cyprus really rested on Genoese money. And the Genoese, by 1378, actually, when the monarchy expires in Cyprus, the Genoese simply take over Cyprus as a colonial possession in the way that the Venetians had done with Crete and Corfu from the former Byzantine world. So the Third Crusade opens up these areas to exploitation. They also gained important footholds along the southern shores of Asia Minor, especially at ports such as Alanya that passed into Turkish control. And here, the Genoese developed a different set of trade networks. If Egypt and the Levantine ports under the control of whatever government ruled in Cairo were in the hands of the Venetians to a large extent, the Genoese developed trade connections into Asia Minor and into the Black Sea. They gained concessions from the Seljuk sultans, established important ports that led them to tap into that caravan trade that was moving out of Central Asia Minor in Anatolia through the caravanserai into the Near East. The Genoese are right there, gaining concessions.